coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're going to hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Hello, everyone. I'm excited to introduce you today to Joseph Gittler, the founder and chairman of Leket Israel, the leading food rescue and resource organization in Israel. In 2022 alone, Leket distributed 27,000 tons of fruits and vegetables and over 2 million cooked meals. I volunteered at Leket. They're doing such important work. They have such creative campaigns. They are making a huge impact on so many people. Man, oh man, through our chat, Joseph sprinkles career tips for immigrants in Israel. He gives a lot of social and economical context in terms of what's been happening here over the past 20 plus years. He goes into the present day landscape and gives you an understanding of the tech sector, the nonprofit sector, the many people who have fallen between the cracks, and where food waste and rescue come into the picture. In this episode, Joseph shares about the fateful bar mitzvah he attended that sparked his desire to rescue cooked meals for those in need. We hash out this conundrum of being able to afford the high cost of living while wanting to work in impactful charitable jobs, and how we deal with this pay gap, how the money world views the charity world, and Joseph shares his proudest moments, which just may surprise you. We could have talked for hours. Per usual, I feel like that's a theme with me, so sorry. There were so many great real-life insights, pieces of advice throughout for anyone looking for a job or trying to navigate their career path anywhere in the world, so keep your ears open. Joseph's story really shows us what one person can do. This is a big one. Here's Joseph Gittler.
Good morning. Oh, can't hear you. Unmute. Important, right?
The famous unmute.
We're ready. We're here. Let's go. So like I said, Joseph, very glad to have you on What Should I Do With My Life? And true to form, would love to just start things off and ask you in one sentence, what do you do?
I'm the chairman of Leket Israel, which is a food bank in the state of Israel.
For those of you listening who know, may not know, Leket has a big name. In my circles, everyone knows Leket. It's not even a question. It's a big name and a big deal doing really important work. So Joseph, with you, I know that your career started off in law. And it's kind of funny because I feel like a lot of folks I've spoken to who've made a career pivot were lawyers. I don't know what's in the water at the law firms or whatever, but first and foremost, how'd you get into the legal world? Was that like your plan from a young age? Will you give us a bit of background on that?
Sure. Well, I think in general, your comment about law is completely correct. I think a lot of people who don't necessarily have a very perfect career thought say, okay, I'm going to go to law school. It's a kind of thing parents kind of like to hear also. It sounds like it's something responsible. It's a good degree to have, even if you're not going to make your career in law. So that's why I think often you'll be in a room and you'll say, you know, who are lawyers here? And half the hands shoot up, but almost none of them are working in that as their career. So my story is quite a typical story in the pivot. Perhaps what I'm spending my time doing today is less typical in the circles that I come from, for a whole host of reasons, which we can get into. But yes, it's a typical story. People go to law school. You know, I went because I finished college and I wanted to continue my education in something practical-ish, and law seemed like a good way to go. Went to law school, you know, had to pass the bar to make my mother happy as well. Did that and really only worked for about a year as a lawyer, but I left law more because we decided to move to Israel as opposed to law. I mean, I did have a problem in the law. I wanted to be very quickly, you know, one of these lawyers who's an advisor to the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. I'm not sure I was the type who was going to go through the slog of many years to get to that point. So it's probably not a career that would have been the right one for me, but I think it's an excellent grounding for anyone, no matter what you're thinking of doing in the future.
Interesting. And it's so true what you said about, you know, things changed when you decided to move here. So I know several people, some friends who moved to Israel, and that was kind of their opportunity for a career pivot or a fresh slate. On the other hand, I also have a friend who was a practicing lawyer in America, came here and had to kind of figure out, you know, now he's doing counsel at a tech company, legal counsel at a tech company. But was the plan when you decided to move here to make a career pivot? Was it like intentional? I'm going to try something new now that I'm in this new land and this new beginning.
So the answer is yes. I had decided already once we made the decision to move that I probably wasn't going to continue with my legal career. When I got here, I did interview with some law firms just to kind of get a sense of what the possibilities were. And it's a good career here. I actually think in some ways it's a better, lower paying here, like most things are, but a better career in the sense that the hours, the quality of life seems better than what I knew, which is, you know, kind of the big law firm world in New York. It may not be the same in other parts of the states. Obviously, there's language issues, and many, many of the attorneys who do come and work here in the end, you know, work in English and in high tech. That's a very typical way to do things. But no, I knew right off the bat I was going to do something else. And most of what, when we came, most of the interviews were more in kind of consulting things and tech companies, marketing, sales kind of jobs, which were good for my personality, for those who know me. And since I wasn't technical, which, by the way, great thing to be, I would say anyone coming to Israel, if you can somehow make yourself technical, become technical, even if you don't go that road, wow, that seems to open up so many doors because we are, you know, the high paying jobs in this country seem to be, especially for immigrants in that tech world. And if that's important to you, if you need that, right? Not everyone needs that. Other people have other goals in life. But if one of your goals is a high paying job, that seems to be the area where it's more of a possibility.
Definitely. That's so true. And I feel like the times have changed even when I moved here about 10 years ago. And at the time it felt like you need good Hebrew to get a good job. And now I feel like, especially with the tech boom, especially that everything is so global and all these Israeli companies are marketing, you know, globally because they have to, because we're so small, English or other languages are so important. So were you interviewing for jobs in Hebrew or in English? I'm just like a bit curious what it was like then.
Oh, ooh, it's a long time ago. You're talking 22 years ago. But I think, you know, the English was the core of what they wanted. I mean, it's in a way, it's a shame. You don't want to get a job because you speak English. It's like I've said at Leket events, oh, you speak English? You can work in fundraising or you can be an English teacher. That's about the only jobs that they offer you in this country. That really doesn't work in the same way. When I used to make that kind of offhanded comment, it really was true. By the way, and that's partially why English language level in this country can be so poor, because they just throw, just because you know English doesn't mean you're going to be a good English teacher. They just throw people into those jobs because they know English. But that being said, I agree with you. I think, by the way, you meet Israelis today who came here 30, 40 years ago. Their kids fought them about speaking English at home. They were embarrassed by the English. They would answer their parents only in Hebrew.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of them regret it now.
Yes.
A, because their English is subpar, and B, they have really awful accents where they shouldn't. Okay.
Yes.
My kids, interestingly, I think my kids, their Hebrew has definitely suffered a little bit growing up in Ra'anana and growing up in a English speaking home. But that being said, if you meet them, maybe their writing skills aren't up to par vis-a-vis their compatriots in North America. But speaking, I think it would be very hard to think, say, oh, these kids grew up overseas in a foreign country. I don't think anyone would get there. So you are so correct. English today is a major advantage. The economy has changed. The world has changed. It's beneficial to have a decent Hebrew, and I advise people to work on that. That's your Hebrew level in some jobs may be important, but for a lot of these international jobs, most of the work you're going to do is going to be in English. It's more about the social aspects of the job, you know, going out for drinks afterwards or hanging out right. or connecting with your coworkers. And that's important for those reasons, especially people who are young and are looking for camaraderie. Look, I tell people all the time, I'm not looking, I'm 48 years old. I have five children, a son-in-law, a dog. You know, I made Aliyah. I have my friends there. I have my friends here. I don't have time for more camaraderie. But if you're young and getting your career started and it's important to network, I think all those things are important. But you will find a job if you have the skills needed, especially if you have that English advantage.
So interesting thinking about how the job market has changed, what that looks like for immigrants here, what it looks like now, what's it going to look like in 10 years? Is it just robots? We'll find out. But to switch to switch gears a little, where were you in your life, in your career, when this idea blossomed?
Sure. So I was working in a software business. First year after we made Aliyah in Jerusalem, coming from Ra'anana, for those listening, and you know, you want to look at your Google Maps, it was a unpleasant decision, especially with the highways that were in existence 22 years ago. So again, career tip, as much as you can make it happen. Wow, the closer you can work to home, the better, or the closer you can work to good public transportation, the better. I know it's not always a possibility, but put that in the back of your heads when looking at jobs. You know, if a job's a little less money, but you can get there on the train easily, it might be worth it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I worked in the company headquarters in Kfar Saba. I worked for a total of about 2.5 years in the tech world. And look, I came to Israel at the height of the Oslo euphoria. We thought times were changing. Unfortunately, we were wrong. I wish we weren't. And I also came to an Israel which had undergone an economic revolution. Really the beginnings, or that was kind of the first stage of, let's say, Startup Nation, late, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, before the bottom fell out. Kind of feels like that a little bit today. We'll see, hopefully I'm wrong. Especially now since tech is even more important piece of the Israeli economy than it was 20 years ago. It's only grown in its importance. So, you know, we really need to find ways. And I call on all those companies and people listening to this, be responsible. Mm. Okay. If you're responsible, then you'll survive. If you're irresponsible, then what we'll read about is how you had a $1 billion valuation a year ago, and now you're out of business. So mm-hmm. be careful. You know, maybe don't get as big offices, maybe don't get as fancy offices, maybe don't pay such high salaries. Let's be in the long game. And by the way, I think also that's very important for people listening to this podcast. Focus a little less on the hype around specific companies. Try to look and gauge as much as you can what you think their long-term prospects are. Those are for people who have multiple choices. If you've got one choice and you haven't been able to find anything, okay. But if you have multiple choices, think. You know, there's definitely people now who are working for larger, more secure companies that are maybe feeling a little more confident in their current prospects. I'm not saying we haven't heard of layoffs at big companies, but your chances now. So it's a different type of career, and it's one people need to take a look at. I have people, I look in my community, and I know this is a little off topic, but I'm just, you know, giving real world is more important than my story, frankly. You know, I look at people in my community. It happens to be, I'm talking about people who are in their 40s, 50s, you know, even early 60s. We don't have that many people who went in the startup phase. We have more people who are in bigger, they didn't start out as bigger companies, but they joined them when they were bigger. And they never made, you know, that huge exit.
Yeah.
But they've had very safe, secure careers where they make a very nice living. Enough to live on, enough to live well on. And there's something to be said about that. And it's definitely something anyone listening needs to think about. You know, if you're at that, maybe you're young, you say, I'm just going to go for one of these startups. Maybe I'll get lucky and get a big exit. You know, that's one consideration. You may be at a different stage of your career. Look, I have a brother who decided in his late 30s now to take a big risk. And it's a big risk. He left a very secure job in the States, in finance. Well, I never want to judge how secure anything is, but he basically decided to go for it now. You know, the jury's still out. We'll see how it does over the next few years or in the long term, but there's so many considerations. And sometimes we just, when we're young, we don't think about these questions deeply enough when we're making career choices. So don't be shy to have an advisor, someone to talk to, who can help you think about these things, because decisions you make at a young age can reverberate in the long term, sometimes unfairly. Look, I remember me like, oh, so I went to law school and I worked for 10 months. Now I'm a lawyer. Like, let's not get too caught up in that. I would say to people, like, calm down, you know, don't pigeonhole me after 10 months in a law firm that this is all I'm capable of. That's it's irrelevant in a way. I just happened to have gone to law school. And I think today people are a little smarter with that. Employers, people understand, you know, if they're looking for someone who can write well and is articulate, and it's for a position in development in a charity, then who cares in a way if they have experience in the not-for-profit world? But you're looking for someone who can write well, who can learn, who cares in that world, let's say, which is the world I'm more familiar with. You know, just back to me for a second. I just, you know, I worked and I just started to see, as the Intifada raged in the early 2000s, and as there was a lot of suffering in this country, suffering, some of which predates that, meaning people who just, even before hospitality dried up, just people who weren't making enough money to survive, some by just what they do, some by choice. I'm not here to, that could be a discussion for another day. And it just, I was disturbed, a little naive. You know, I thought I moved to the land of milk and honey, which I did. But unfortunately, we have the same problems that every other country has. Sometimes we provide solutions, others don't. You know, what other country in the world brings in, by choice, massive amounts of immigrants who have no resources? Everyone else, those immigrants, they force their way into the country. So I give kudos and tremendous credit to the state of Israel. But that brings economic problems. And so really what's happened in Israel over the last 30 years is that we've gone from a quasi-socialist to a quasi to hyper-capitalist country. And like other countries with similar tax regimes, you have a percentage of the population that just simply gets left behind and they don't earn enough money. And again, you're young, you're just starting your career. I'm talking to you now, but also to the listeners. We just have a percentage of the population here, and you're feeling, okay? The cost of living in Israel has become astronomical. Maybe we're starting to see a little bit of that coming down now. Maybe, I could be wrong. And we have some unique things here that other countries don't have. And so what it really meant for me is, I just saw then, and I'd say, unfortunately, sadly, it's gotten worse over the last 20 years since Leket got started. And that is, people who don't earn enough money vis-a-vis the cost of living. You know, the cost of living here is first world Western. In some things more expensive, in some things less expensive, but let's just call it the same, okay, if we start balancing it out. And the salaries outside of the top are just relatively low. I think high tech's done a service and a disservice. That's what people sometimes need to understand, right? Yeah. It's done a service for those who are in it, okay? And I think at this point, you know, an engineer at Google in Israel is probably, I think what it costs at Google here, what it costs Google in New York, is probably not that different at this point. I'm talking on the margin.
Yeah.
But the trickle down has not been as much as we had hoped it would be. Part of that, actually someone explained to me the other day, Professor Avi Weiss from Bar-Ilan University, and he said one of the issues, and this again is a little off topic, but is that Israel's high tech is very high-end high tech. We don't have a lot of blue-collar high tech. Blue-collar high tech is like working in a factory, or even working in a high-tech company that, let's say, produces hardware, where the salaries are a bit higher than other blue-collar kind of jobs, but they're not as much as, let's say, white-collar high tech. And so, and it makes sense here. It's a small country, and you know, we don't have that. We don't have a massive workforce for that kind of work. It all makes sense, but what it really means is that you have, you know, the 10, 15%, whatever it is, of jobs that are in this higher end high tech, which pay very high. And then you have, you know, everyone else who aren't making outside of entrepreneurs and, you know, people in let's say attorneys who've been at it for a while and are already making a better wage. And that's a problem because it's just brought a lot of money into the system. And if we think of trickle down, if you work for a catering company and they happen to be catering at Apple, or they're catering at another big company, but which isn't high tech, you know, you're making the same money. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, your company happens to put you in Apple's catering company as opposed to some other business, you're still stuck where you are. And that trickle down is just not sufficient. And wages have gone up here. There's a lot of pressure. The unemployment's low, which is good for the people. Even from what you've heard with the high tech layoffs recently, there's still very low unemployment here. And that's good. So it should mean that there are jobs out there. You know, do they fit what you're looking for? Do they pay what you're looking for? You know, that's a separate question, but there are jobs out there.
And where was the idea for Leket born? Was there one incident that happened that caused you to take action? What is the story?
So I think, again, on the one hand, I was feeling the poverty in this country. And I live this fortunate life. And I was like anyone listening to this podcast who's been to an Israeli wedding or bar and bat mitzvah, coming of age, or to a hotel, we all comment on the food, how bountiful it is, how plentiful it is, and what are they doing? And if younger people are listening to this podcast, so maybe many of you have worked as waiters in some of these event halls or hotels, and so you've really seen it firsthand, not just from what's on the buffet, but what happens in the back of the kitchens. And I just had this kind of epiphany at an event I was at. And I just said, this is crazy. I'm getting calls for charity. Often people are asking for help with food. You know, I see stories in the press. I read reports about poverty. And here we have all this food waste. And how could we not be putting the two together? And, you know, at that point, kind of the business sense, I would say, kicked in and said, well, let's find out what's actually going on here. And very quickly, it became apparent after conversations with caterers and charities that very little work was being done in this area specifically of, let's say, rescuing excess cooked meals and many other things that we do today where there wasn't much action. And I said to myself, this is crazy. I had my legal and American hat on, which said, no one's going to give me this food. They're going to worry if the food goes bad.
Right.
They're going to get sued. Right. That's the litigious
right.
culture
That's what
we
I thought.
Grew up with.
There's all these like legalities of rules, why you can't already prepared food, why you can't donate that, or allergies, or.
Right. You even added part B, allergies, which I didn't really think much about then. but correct. You know, today in the United States, you know, if you showed up to any charity with meals with, I don't know, peanuts in it, they'd put you in front of the firing squad. Yeah. Or they would ask you. And so that people didn't ask those kind of questions here for good and for bad. And the charities were very interested in this type of food. So I just said, okay, you know, I was lucky. I took off a few months from the business. I was able to do that. And very quickly, I just started picking up food in my own car and distributing it to charities to feed the poor. And very quickly, what I saw, what I thought of as a lark, something, okay, let me get this started. And then, you know, and then I'll go back to the business. It took off so quickly. And I just felt this sense of awe and responsibility. Let's see where we can take this. And I thought I'll go back and then I'll try to raise some philanthropic dollars to get it on some footing, and then someone else will run with it. But very quickly, I saw what the possibilities were, what the response was from the people who have the food, from the people who needed the food, from the people who have the money. People were just excited about the idea. And so decided, okay, let's see where this can go. And that was almost 20 years ago.
Before, you were talking about risk taking, you know, if it's a small startup, that's high risk, high reward. If it's, you know, leaving this job for that. I mean, you took a big risk here. First of all, you said that you planned on taking a couple months off to pursue this idea. you had planned to go back. So first of all, how did you even get to the point where you decided you would take a few months off? Like, what's going through your head? That's a big decision. And then let alone the fact that you never went back, like that was it.
So for me, what happened was that September 11th, actually, as strange as it had, had a very big impact on the work that I was doing. And that's because, you know, the what I was working on tech-wise really dried up. The great conversations that I was having on September 10th, on September 12th, those just there was no one to talk to anymore. Everything just froze, and it froze for a long time. And so, you know, I pivoted within the business, and then what I pivoted to, it became apparent pretty quickly, I would say within 6 months to a year, that, you know, I could have been doing the best job ever, but what I was working on probably wasn't going to go anywhere. So I was a little bit between things within the business. And so that, you know, so thoughts kind of got swirling in my head, saying, you know, am I going to leave the business for good? Or, you know, maybe it's just an opportunity to see if there's something else out there that I might want to do. I didn't have any grand plans when I came to this all with some, you know, advantages. And I know that, and you know, it may not come out. I had some, let's say, financial advantages that most people don't have. Okay. And I respect that. And I put it out there just because, you know, I wouldn't want someone to listen to this podcast and say, oh, he's being dishonest. Okay. Even if it's, you know, even if it's my own personal business, I had some advantages, and that allowed me to think a little bit differently than other people can think. That's certainly part of it. No doubt. You know, I didn't have any grand plan A for my career, I would say. And I also didn't have any grand plan. I think most people don't. You know, you just, you know, you need a job. So you kind of, you know, you find a job. If you're entrepreneurial, you might just jump into those waters at a very young age. But most people just, they want to find a job and hopefully it's a good job that they'll be happy with and make money to feed their families, etc. You know, the blessing of moving to Israel is that something that I probably never would have done living in North America would have ever happened. I can't imagine ever that I would have dropped everything and tell you that 20 years later, you know, I'd be in the charity world. And so I feel, you know, I'm sad that there's such a, that it's such an important sector, the charity world in Israel, but it is everywhere else. But I that would have never been something that I would have imagined would have happened. But I think coming here, and with my worldview on coming to Israel and what I hoped for the country, or maybe I expected for the country, so that gave me a little bit of a different viewpoint. It's not like I didn't drop everything for Hurricane Katrina and move to New Orleans,
right?
Because there was plenty of work that was needed there, you know, and I didn't, I'm not in Turkey right now, right? And, you know, and, you know, helping out there. I'm not saying because I'm not a good person. It's just, there was something about this issue that just bothered me. There's something about waste that bothers me. As a naive person in those days, when I heard poor, I thought hungry. We could have gone in 100 other different directions when you think of poor and poverty, but that's the way most people think. And luckily for me, I stepped into a totally empty pit that not enough work was being done in this area. And to this day, I say, wow, I wish there was more competition in this area, because we've done so well and we are so well known and we're very large in what we do, but we could be doing five times as much. It's just hard for us to do it. But if there were other players in the field doing more here, even a little ditty, you know, incy bitsy Israel, there's more that could be done. So competition is good. It's always nice to get a head start. But I would say in almost any business, anyone looking for a job, you know, if you're in something and you see you have no competition, I would be concerned about that. It might work in the short term, but in the long term, if there's no competition, there's some, you're in a business that no one actually needs.
That's such a good point.
Be careful of that.
I really just was thinking of that exactly. And on the one hand, I was thinking, oh, well, you know, so in the nonprofit world, in the, you know, charity sector, you want competition because you want to rule out the problem. You want to get rid of the problem. But as you said, exactly, in any other type of business or for-profit business, there better be competition or else there's just probably no need for whatever it is that you're doing. A lot stuck out with what you said to me. I love how you said you had no grand plans for a career, for anything. The pieces kind of just fell together. And I think that is so important. I personally have always felt a lot of pressure to have the grand plan. What's my plan? Even what's my 5-year plan, my 10-year plan? What's the dream? What's the dream? You know, what's the end game? And I think it's important to normalize that a lot of us who end up achieving amazing things like you have didn't necessarily think at the beginning that there would be this grand plan, that there would be this huge, crazy impact or project or achievement or what is today Leket. Leket now has over 130 employees. You've rescued 25,000 tons. It's a lot of fruit and veggies, provided over 1.5 million hot meals for those in need. These are crazy statistics. This is beyond impressive. This is unbelievable. What has been your proudest moment to date with Leket?
That's a great question. By the way, if I may correct your statistics slightly.
Please correct them.
We distributed just in 2022, 27,000 tons of fruits and vegetables and over 2 million cooked meals. That was just in 1 year. So it's a massive operation with tremendous logistics. Look, it's a great question. What am I most proud of? I think what I'm really proud of actually is the team that we have managing the organization, who are many of them, especially at the senior level, are people who could be working and doing something else and have made the decision that they're actually willing to take a haircut in their earnings because they want to not just do something meaningful and work in something interesting, which it is. Our CEO says all the time, I can't believe the job that I have. He just can't believe when he wakes up in the morning how he spends his time. So to have a team like that, and to hopefully pay them a living wage and make payroll the first of every month, in a way, that's something sometimes what I'm most excited about and proud of. But of course, that's just one part of it. You know, the other part is helping 230,000 needy Israelis of all shapes, stripes, colors, ethnicities, religions, week in, week out, and really just trying to keep on pushing and growing and doing more. That's the most important thing. That's what keeps us going, being creative, trying to come up with new ways of helping, new ways of taking care of the poor, always working on the organ. We're very big and bureaucratic at this point, but we're also very grassroots. You know, we're trying to keep that culture. You have to be responsible. We have a big budget at this point. A lot of money is flowing through the organization. You know, so we need very serious people on our board. We need serious people at the senior staff level managing. It's not some small business. And you see when you don't have that. I mean, you know, I'm not here to give myself credit, but I'm lucky that I understood relatively early on that this is not the Joseph Gittler show, even if I may be identified with Leket. This is, you know, I don't own Leket. Sometimes some of our employees say, Bala Bayit, you know, owner. Oh, the owner's here. No. Leket is owned by the people of the state of Israel, and it's managed by a board of directors appointed by people involved in Leket. And it's a public trust, I would say. And so it's very important to have serious people. Not enough people ask about that. You know, not enough people ask those questions. They just say, oh, I hear Leket, they're doing a good job. Here's money. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have enough time in the day for everyone to have those types of discussions with me, but those of you interviewing for jobs, you know, you may think you're coming in at a very low level. As much as you can do your homework, it's important, right? You want to be careful where you end up in jobs. You know, if you went to work for FTX, for those following that story, it looked like a dream job, okay? And sometimes it's hard to find out what's really going on. I understand that. But, you know, as much digging as you can do, and you know, maybe you can't ask those questions in interviews, but if there's ways of finding out. So I think, you know, people who come to work at Leket, I think they understand that they're coming to someplace which is solid, takes its fundraising seriously, takes its management seriously. Now, if you have a disastrous year because the markets are down and there's high inflation and no one's donating money, okay, then we'll have the same problem that any other business has. Right. But it's not going to be because of mismanagement, I hope. Al tiftach pele satan. Don't open your mouth to Satan. You know, it's not going to be because our board didn't do its job. But it's important also when I know you need a job, but it's okay. It'll show, I think, a level of sophistication when you're interviewing to try to get a sense in a way. Yes, you have to wow them with who you are, but I think it's okay to say, look, this job is really important to me, and I want to make sure I end up in the right place, not just from a point of view of a career path, presuming I do a good job, right? Not to be presumptuous, but if they're hiring you, they think they're hiring you because they think you can do a good job. But just to understand a little bit better, you know, who you're getting into bed with, right? Who's the company? You know, if they're a startup, what's their funding? If they're a big for-profit company, go take a look at their finances, how they're doing. You know, are they losing money every year?
Yeah.
What does that mean? You know, there's a lot of questions that you can ask and understand, because I agree with you about the career plan. Okay. Honestly, like, how many people have a career? Okay. If you're going to medical school, you have a career plan.
Right.
Okay. That's one of the only ones. Like, you can become an engineer and you go a totally different direction, right? You go to dental school, you're probably going to be a dentist. Yeah. I know I happen to know a bunch of doctors who don't work in medicine anymore, but that's much, much, much more rare than, let's say, a law school or, I don't know, any other, any other liberal arts degrees. Okay. Putting those aside. So, yeah, I know a lot of people who did accounting degrees because it's a good grounding, but they don't work in the accounting world. And so, you know, you never know. And I would add to that, almost every Leket donor who's an entrepreneur, you know, some of them with very major business, I always end up in conversations at some point asking them, like, did you ever imagine? No one ever has the ego to say, oh, yeah, sure, I imagined I was going to be this. No, I had a small, you know, tiny little hardware store in, you know, New Jersey. And, you know, that store did well. So we decided, let's open another store. And then we saw that store did well. So then we decided to open a big. It's just a lot of things are just happen kind of as things are going on. You know, if you're in a career job working in a big company, it's often very different. But if you have more of that entrepreneurial spirit, then, you know, you never know where things are going to take you.
Many things. First of all, wow, was I off on my statistics and misread the website. So I'm going to look back on that. But wow, what an amazing correction that all the stats I gave were just for 1 year. Damn, that is unbelievable. I love what you said about your employees. And one of the things that you're most proud of is ensuring their paychecks and their, you know, well-being at work and in their jobs. Talk a lot about the high cost of living here. This is a problem. More and more people looking to work in those higher paying jobs. So as things are right now, how can we encourage people to, yes, decide to work in the nonprofit sector? Or what changes? What is this landscape going to look like? What can we do to increase the pay? Now, I know that's a lot of things, but I've had this conundrum many times. I was in the nonprofit world. I was always kind of on the fence. My focus in college was nonprofit management. And for the last 4 years, I was working for large tech corporations. And I was always advised by people, you should do, you know, your comfortable, well-paying job. And then on the side, do the volunteering, do the mitzvahs, do the things that fill you up. So what do you say to that? And how do we make this change, or what steps can we take to change that narrative so that our full-time jobs can be these impactful jobs that fill us up and we can handle the cost of living in this crazy country?
Right. So that's a great comment and question. So look, obviously there are people who are going to stay in that tech world just because no matter where we get the salaries to in the not-for-profit world, it's just never going to be on the same level. And the only thing I can call on those people is to do your part, whether it be volunteering, giving money, et cetera. And thankfully, many people do. But, you know, if you're not and you're on this podcast, please keep that in mind. It's important. And we were all brought up that way. Anyone who made Aliyah to Israel was brought up that way. So it's almost not a question that they're going to try to do their part. You know, what you're bringing up brings up a deeper question, how the private world, the private sector, the moneyed world views the charitable world. And I definitely come up on the side, and I recommend people to go see Dan Pallotta's TED Talk on this. You can look it up. He has a website called Uncharitable as well. And I come out on that side, which is the side that says, you want the charity sector to solve the world's most intractable problems, but you don't want people to get paid well, and you don't want them to spend money on things like marketing, et cetera. And so definitely a part of the discussion that needs to change is that people need to understand, if you want good people coming into the not-for-profit world, okay, who want to be in that world and are dedicated to that world, they can't also be clients of Leket. Okay. We need them to earn reasonable salaries. There's always going to be a haircut. Okay. Let's put that out there. Okay. You know, Leket's never going to pay like Apple. Okay. That's just not going to happen. But we need to bridge the gap in some way so that people who really want to make that career and will make such a large difference in that career, in doing that, we want them to be in that career. You know, it's almost like Jewish education, and you know, that's such a big topic in the United States. You know, we can't have a situation where a Jewish kid wants to go and get a Jewish education, but cannot do it financially, right? The community has to figure out how we do that. So it's, in a way, it's the same thing here. You know, the people with the money need to understand that we need to be able to pay people to a point at a level where they can earn a reasonable enough living that they can be in this world. And I would say, you know, in the bigger charities already at, you know, at the senior level, people are earning reasonable salaries. You know, and if you're, again, if you're an English speaker and you're going to do development fundraising kind of work, so already your salary is going to be higher because hopefully you're a rainmaker. And if you're bringing in the money, you're bringing in the money. Right. So you can push a little bit in that area. Again, maybe not right in the beginning, but you come in, you prove yourself, they need you, they're going to do what they have to do to keep you. But, you know, if you're more on the social work side, on the operational side, you know, then, you know, the salaries tend to be very, very low, and it's the same problem. And, you know, the one advantage I'd say maybe people listening to this podcast have is, you know, they're coming from the English speaking world. That may limit the type of jobs that they could do in the not-for-profit world, but those jobs that they will do tend to be, you know, on the higher scale of paying, but then they have to do those jobs.
Right. Oh man, Joseph, we're hardly scratching the surface. There's so much more I want to ask you about becoming from a one-man show to a 130-person operation, but we don't have so much time. So if you final quick cues, if you will. What words of wisdom would you give to people who don't know what to do with their lives?
So you said in the last comment, no grand plan, meaning we got to 130 employees from a lot of it was serendipity. Okay, maybe there's some good management along the way, but a lot of it was just plugging hole and the hole that needed to be plugged. And that's why, you know, mazel is a big piece, right? Luck. Listen, don't settle until you need to. Maybe that's one piece of advice. Okay. You know, if you can hold out and find what you're really looking for, do it for as long as you can. The world has changed. I've seen it. You know, do I get disappointed when someone takes a job with us and leaves after 6 months for greener pastures? Sure, I do. Would I like people to be honest in job interviews? Don't tell us, you know, and I see it all the time. But on the other hand, when you need a job, when you want a job, people will say almost anything to get the job. You know, my best piece of advice is hold out for as long as you can to find what you really want to do. And if you can't find it, just try to take something that will give you the experience you need and try to get something with as much responsibility as quickly as it. That's why it's sometimes great to go into a startup or go into a charity, which is just getting started, because they're going to work your tush off and they're going to dump stuff on you, and you might be upset, and you're not doing what they told you to do. And this is what happened to me in my first job. And they're not fulfilling some of the promises they made to you, which, of course, I was upset at the time. But, man, I learned a lot because I had to do things that I never thought I would do. So there's something to that when you have those kind of a job. So the advice kind of contradicts itself, but, you know, glean from it what you may want to.
Glean from it. Gotta love that little pun. I love that advice. I can't wait to listen to it again and tease it out. Joseph, where can people stay up to date with Leket, what Leket's doing, and what can we expect from Leket this year in 2023? Anything big?
So we have our website, leket.org. That's one place. We also have, we're on LinkedIn, me personally, and Leket itself. Of course, Instagram, they tell me, let me, you know, put my age out there. They tell me we do Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. You can find us, Leket Israel. I don't, you know, I just make the videos, talk, and then I'm very lucky. They've just put it up there for me. Please follow us. Please come volunteer. Easy. You can find ways to volunteer on our website. Anyone can be in touch with me directly as well. Joseph@leket.org. If people have any questions, comments, I'm happy, you know, always to talk to anyone. Last but not least, yeah, Leket 2023. So we're hoping to get to 30,000 tons, growth of about 10-15%. We're hoping to get to 2.5 million cooked meals. That would be amazing if we could accomplish that. Last but not least, we have a great new project making soups. We're not making them ourselves yet. Right now it's outsourced. Using the last bits, the ends of the ends from what Leket picks up, making sure that that doesn't go to waste, producing about 10,000 soups every week, primarily for homebound elderly, a powerful, beautiful new project. And of course, if you're listening to this and you're not in the job search, or even if you're in the job search and you're independently wealthy, we're more than happy to take your support. So look us up. We'll do great things with your money. We're highly leveraged as a charity, which I think people appreciate. For every shekel we spend, we bring in about 5 shekels worth of food. There's something really beautiful about that. So follow us, come volunteer, and I wish everyone great luck with their career search and their career development.
Amazing. Thank you, Joseph. Oh, very inspiring and impactful, and just shows what one person can do. I mean, this started from, again, you know, you're modest, but it did start from one person, you, and now it's this, the ripple effect is just, it's pretty unbelievable. So thank you for everything you've done and have been doing, and I hope to be back soon to volunteer. I would love that. And thanks so much for sharing today.
Thank you for the opportunity, and most important, wish you good luck in your career.
Hi, everyone. What an episode. I told you. I really felt Joseph's investment in you, the listener, during the talk. He was so mindful of giving the real deal insights and stuff that would just be really beneficial for all of us as we navigate our career journeys. One of my favorite things that Joseph said was how decisions we make at a young age can reverberate for a really long time and for the long term. We need to take the time to stop and think about what we're doing. Are we interested in this? Is this one decision supposed to dictate everything we do? Like Joseph said in our chat, so I went to law school and worked as a lawyer for a year, and now I'm a lawyer, that's all I can do. We need to not let others pigeonhole us. And most importantly, we need to not pigeonhole ourselves. Joseph also talks about the importance of doing our homework when we're on the career search, if it's possible, to get a sense of the leadership. What's really going on with the company? What's going on behind the scenes? What are the finances? As Joseph said, find out who you're really getting into bed with. It's easy for us to get swept off of our feet, looking at great conditions, things that on the surface seem wonderful, even an amazing product, but we need to do the due diligence and know who we're really dealing with and what's going on. Of course, I love when Joseph said, don't settle until you need to when it comes to finding what you want to do. Hold out for as long as you can. I'll be listening to this episode on repeat to glean those nuggets Joseph shared. If you're interested in volunteering, donating, or learning more about Leket, please go to leket.org. You can follow Leket on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Links will be in the show notes. And you can...
You can currently help support Leket's Purim campaign and send Purim Eat greeting cards to your friends or family, all while supporting this great cause. I just signed up for those. So that's it for now. Bye, everybody.